You're listening to Central Time. I'm Jean Purcell in for Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Social issues are factoring into the governor's race. Coming up a little later, we'll find out if the economy will take a back seat in this year's election.
But first, the conversation about military veterans often centers around challenges such as post-traumatic stress disorder, suicide risk, and other psychological conditions.
But our next guest says we've gone too far in talking about veterans as victims, that we've attached a stigma to those veterans, and we need to change the conversation.
McUbbin Thomas Owens is with us now. He is a Marine Infantry veteran of Vietnam and a professor of national security affairs at the Naval War College. His recent piece, Life After Wartime, appeared in the Weekly Standard. Mac, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I want to start out with this idea of veteran as victim narrative. In your estimation, well, first tell me a little bit about what this narrative looks like, where I'm going to see it, and what sorts of stories it's going to tell me.
Well, you're going to see it in sort of the idea that that anybody who's been in combat going to be suffering things like alcoholism, drug problems, homelessness, incarceration, or post-traumatic stress disorder, all these sorts of things in a way that exceeds that of the rest of society. It's really something that began with the Vietnam War. I think maybe a little bit less of that now, but even in sort of a benign way, there's this idea that anybody who's been into combat has somehow been victimized by the experience. And, you know, I tried to contrast it. I used the example of General James Mattis, who is, I think, probably esteemed as one of probably the best four-star generals we produced in a very long time, who used the term post-traumatic growth, and recognizing the idea that, yeah, people go through combat. They've suffered something, but the fact is that suffering can be the basis of a growth rather than the idea that they are victims or somehow diminished by that experience.
Did there used to be, in your estimation, a different narrative about veterans before Vietnam, or was there a narrative at all? Because it seems as though, like, particularly after World War II, veterans were everywhere.
Sure. I mean, I think basically the idea was that when people went to war, when we had war, men went to war, and that's what expected of them. I mean, the fact is that some came back in better shape than others, and of course we, you know, badly wounded veterans, we can certainly see that. But there was some sense, I think, of an honoring of them in a way that you don't see today. And don't get me wrong. I mean, things are much better now than they were during the Vietnam years. I mean, the fact is that those people these days who are opposed to the various wars don't take their anger out on the soldiers the way that I think the anti-war folks around the Vietnam time frame did. But if you look back, you recognize that, again, you had these, they went by different names. In World War One, it was shell shock, and in World War Two, it was combat fatigue. It was this recognition that that war has a psychological impact. But it was really with Vietnam, I think, with especially a lot of the anti-war psychiatrists at the time, Robert G. Lifton and some others, who really developed this narrative that Vietnam was probably the worst war in the history of the world somehow, and that therefore anybody who had been in that war was going to be traumatized to an extent that had not occurred before. And as I say, well, that stigma is diminished to a certain extent. I think it's still out there.
Yeah, and I just want to make sure that what we're hearing you say is clear. You're not saying that soldiers don't come home with problems sometimes. It's what you're saying is that oftentimes the magnitude of those problems are overplayed in the media and other places that don't necessarily represent the proportion of veterans that might have some of these issues.
Absolutely. I mean, look, one of the ways I may, in the piece I wrote, I make a distinction between post-traumatic stress and post-traumatic stress disorder. The latter is a, you know, psychoneurological condition that of extended time. We certainly know that it exists. But, you know, anybody who's been in combat is going to probably go through some phase of post-traumatic stress. The fact is, what do you do with it? Do you come out stronger or worse? And again, I'm certainly not denying the existence of these post-traumatic stress disorder or anything like that. I'm just saying that sometimes for both ideological and bureaucratic reasons, there's been a sort of an incentive to over-diagnose the malady.
And so in terms of where we see that narrative in our everyday lives, where do we see that? Is it in news stories? Is it in politics? Where?
Mostly in the news. And again, I hate to pick on journalists and so forth, but the fact is that if you're going to say that suicide is more prevalent among veterans, then what you need to do is sort of the basic idea of comparing cohorts by age, basically. And when you start to do that, you find that the idea that that veterans are more likely to be incarcerated or the veterans are more likely to commit violent crimes, you have to compare them to the age cohort, and you find that the differences are not that great. That tends to be an age-specific thing rather than the experience. That's the biggest problem I see.
And, you know, when soldiers come home, especially, you know, lately, we're often eager to help them in any way that we can. So does that mean that in some ways, do we fall into that narrative too?
Well, I mean, again, as you know, things are much better. So I'm hardly going to criticize people who want to treat returning soldiers well as opposed to what happened during the Vietnam years. But I think that it's easy for one to make a pretty quick transition from this idea of helpfulness to the idea that somehow what we're helping are these poor, disturbed guys who've just been through so much. And again, not denying. I mean, there are different levels of combat, you know, people coming home with all of these. I mean, one of the ironies, of course, is that people who would have died of their wounds even in Vietnam now come home and survive. And so things like traumatic brain injuries, things like that. I mean, there's very clear we're talking about this, but this idea somehow that just anybody who's been in combat is somehow is diminished by that, is made worse off by that, I think, is something we need to fight, and everybody needs to fight it, the veterans themselves. And I think there has been pushback on this. I think, again, in my article, I mentioned a couple of people who've done that. About the same time that I wrote that piece, there was a piece by a returning Marine veteran, also from Iraq, who commented on this, sort of, again, in the attempt that people were taking to try to be kind to him and so forth, came across as a sort of a pitying sort of a thing.
Yeah, in fact, you open your piece in the Weekly Standard with a note from a reader who says that veterans should be treated not with sympathy or pedestals, but real gratitude. And could you talk about that concept for a second?
Yeah, I mean, there's I guess part of the problem here is that that on the one hand, we have to be very careful about putting soldiers somehow on a pedestal, looking up to them and admiring them for doing, you know, what they've taken to be their duty. That's one extreme. The other, of course, is looking down at them to basically pity them or to feel sorry for them. I guess that's the same thing, to feel pity for a soldier to have been this. It's a matter of one citizen to another looking the citizen in the eye and basically recognizing the what that individual has done, the sacrifice that individual has borne, in a way that neither elevates him to something above other citizens or diminishes him below other citizens.
How likely is it, though, that given sort of the heightened awareness we have of veterans and some of veterans' issues, you know, we've been hearing all these news stories about the VA and waiting times and problems facing vets coming home and all of those things, that we're likely to sort of be able to step back and take that look at a veteran as being in that role as opposed to putting them on a pedestal or putting them in some other situation?
Well, yeah, but I mean, there's also I also think I make a distinction between, you know, treating somebody who's been in combat as somebody who's been, I hate to use the word, but victimized by the VA, you know, which is this massive bureaucracy where in fact there has been dereliction, bureaucratic ineptitude, and even to the extent of criminal ineptitude and so forth. But that's a different matter than the what I think is this general narrative, perhaps, that I had in mind, this idea that anybody who's been in combat, that anybody who's chosen to serve their country somehow has been victimized by that experience.
We're talking to McCubbin Thomas Owens about what he calls the veteran as victim narrative, treating war veterans as psychologically damaged victims of their military experiences.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. If you're a veteran, what do you think of the case our guest is making? Do you feel like the experience damaged you or strengthened you, or maybe a little of both? Do you think civilians overlook the bonds of camaraderie you maybe had during your time of war? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email talk@WPR.org.
We'll be continuing the conversation after a look at the latest news with Kristen Durst. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Gene Purcell.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We continue our conversation with Vietnam veteran McCubbin Thomas Owens, professor of national security affairs at the U.S. Naval War College. He's making the case that we should stop thinking of veterans as victims and recognize instead the strengths they may have gained from their experience at war.
And you can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about what our guest has to say as veterans, as victims? If you are a vet yourself, do you agree that people take a look at your story as being a victim of your experience? What would you like to say to civilians, maybe, or the media, who don't understand what it's like to be at war, for better or for worse? Again, that number is 800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@WPR.org. Now, Professor Owens, one of the things that we haven't talked about so much, we've been talking about the narrative, the general narrative of veterans as victims. But what about strengths that veterans might pick up as a result of their experiences? You talked about the PTG idea before that. We heard a little bit about that idea of post-traumatic growth. Are those two things related?
I think so. I mean, one other thing that you gain by spending some time being shot at by people who are trying to kill you is a certain degree of resilience. You know, things that might bother other people may not bother you quite as much. So there's the old, if something I saw in Vietnam, I think everybody was in Vietnam, you know, to those who fought for freedom, you know, freedom bears a certain, is a little bit sweeter. And I think that's part of the sort of the recognition that, you know, in much of the world, sort of prosperity that we Americans take for granted is not there. And the fact that we fight for this, we come back, we certainly have to go through periods of readjustment. That's what families and all the helping organizations are for. But the idea is that if you are so inclined, and I think most of veterans are, you can see this experience in war as an opportunity for growth rather than somehow that buying into the the victim narrative.
Yeah, and speaking of that period of readjustment, in your article, you cite a colleague who invokes that idea of a hero's journey to make the return and emerge stronger as a result of that. How does a veteran go through that type of transition, that journey?
Yeah, it's Dave Dinello is a very bright guy. He was wounded in Fallujah, who basically, you know, talks about you know, all the great sort of universal myths like Odysseus' return from Troy and the things that he goes through. I mean, in his view, these universal myths. And by the way, the original meaning of the word myth is not something that's false. It's a story. It's a Greek word, and mythoi means basically a story. So these are stories, I think, that that feed into the idea that that human beings undergo this test, you know, descend into Hades, whatever you want to call it, and then return, and they make their way through these obstacles and adjustments and so forth. And of course, again, it's not something most individuals can or want to do by themselves. that's the role of families, you know, basically understand what they've done, but at the same time, not try to, you know, basically treat them like they're fragile flowers that you know, can't be addressed. I think, you know, engaging people, you know, most, to be, in my experience, my dad was in two campaigns in the Pacific during World War II, and I noticed, you know, he never really wanted to talk about things, you know. And so I think that sometimes it's hard to get people to talk about them, but at least provide the opportunity. I think that's perhaps something that can be of utility to them. But again, just the love and support of families and community and the like, I think, is probably the best thing that's going to help.
And listeners, if you would like to join in, 800-642-1234. We've got an open line for you, I think. Right now, let's go to the phones, and Scott joins us from Janesville. Hi, Scott.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Yeah, I have friends that are veterans from World War II on up to current. My son-in-law is a U.S. Marine, currently stationed in Yuma, Arizona. Has two tours under his belt in Afghanistan. And largely from what I've heard from veterans past is Korea and Vietnam were largely unpopular wars because no American home soil or, say, shipping or anything else like that was attacked, and it wasn't a retaliatory event. Servicemen nowadays, and women, do deserve accolades because it's an entirely volunteer force. We have people willing to go in and serve their country with, you know, nothing in return expected except they want to do it. I myself am not a veteran. I was injured in an industrial accident, and being a little bit disabled, I am medically ineligible, and I missed my chance. And my father, on the other hand, he was born in 1928 and enlisted in 1944 in the Navy. He was 15 when he enlisted and 16 when he shipped out to Guam. He was on the invasion force of Japan, felt it was his duty, even at that young age.
Well, Scott, thanks so much for the call. We appreciate that. And Mac, what about that idea? He mentioned that Korea, Vietnam, unpopular wars, and you mentioned earlier that sort of changed the narrative in your viewpoint. The fact that the wars were so far away and so, I guess, sort of abstract in some senses, to the American public, do you think that played a part in this?
Well, sure. Not so much Korea. I mean, we think of Korea as the forgotten war, but I think it really, a lot of this crystallizes with Vietnam. Now, remember, I mean, the fact is, you know, I made the very good point that today's military is a volunteer force, but we also, we drafted people for World War II as well as for Vietnam. But there was a time, I think, even at that point, that people thought that this was something that you did. Now, admittedly, the purposes of the war, you know, certainly the Vietnam War had its unpopularity, but the fact is that, you know, it was, I'm sure people will disagree, but I mean, the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution was a de facto declaration of war, so it was done constitutionally correctly. And, you know, certainly at the time, if you go back to 1964, 1965, well up into 1966-67, the war was generally popular among the American people. It's later in 68 and later where it becomes very unpopular. But even though you had a very substantial anti-war minority, you'd call it, were very vocal and very influential in thinking about this. And I think they helped to set to create the narrative. As I say, it's much reduced from what it once was, But again, I think you can trace its origins to that point specifically.
Do you see one of the things I'm curious about is why you chose to write this piece now? We've got a lot of soldiers, men and women, coming back from war. Did you write it for them or for the public at large?
Well, a little bit of both. I mean, I think that one of the things that I thought I would get much more pushback on the PTSD aspect of it, but the fact is most of the veterans I've talked to pretty much agree with me. But I think there's it's sort of a recognition. I mean, this is something that General Mattis said in his speech that I cite. And he's talking to veterans of Marine, especially Marine veterans Iraq and Afghanistan, and saying, telling them not to buy into this sort of thing. So I think I was trying to basically reinforce his message, but at the same time, a little bit of education for the for people who may, in many cases, not even realize what they're doing. Again, I use this example of the Wall Street Journal piece by the Marine who was talking to this woman, and it was very clear that, you know, she wasn't anti-war in any sense of the word, but she, her whole tenor seemed to be that, you know, somehow she just felt sorry for him because of what he's been through.
You mentioned the speech by General Mattis, and when that speech happened, it got a fair amount of play. And I'm sort of wondering, is this the right time, in your estimation, to be having this conversation? And what kind of reaction have you gotten to the article that you've written so far? You haven't quite gotten some of the pushback you expected, but what have you heard?
Well, I mean, it's very rarely when I write anything, but most of it's been very positive. And I think General Mattis's speech was positive too. Again, what you have—I don't know if you're familiar with this guy, but you know, he's, as I say, one of the, you know, greatly respected four-star generals who whenever he comes here to the War College, he's the only four-star that routinely gets a standing ovation because he is very capable of certainly rallying the troops and speaking in a very inspirational way. And I think it was heartfelt. I mean, his speech actually, the bulk of his speech was on that. This was in response to questions where he really takes on the victim the veteran as victim a narrative, and tries to make the point for post-traumatic growth. Now, by the way, he's been making that for some time. It was just this particular speech seemed to get more publicity than some of the things he said before.
Well, Mac, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We appreciate it. That was McGovern Thomas Owens, Marine Infantry Veteran of Vietnam and a professor of National Security Affairs at the U.S. Naval War College.